Hello everyone, this is Mike Quinsey, Connecting the Light. My guest today is Scott Blum. He's the Hay House best-selling author, also a filmmaker and Daily Om co-founder. And we're going to discuss his new book, Winter Moon Rises, which, if all went well, should have been published this month. And it is the third in his best-selling series, that includes Summer's Path and Waiting for Autumn. Now, Blum is an experienced speaker, and we're going to talk about his book, which covers many aspects, including soul contracts, conscious conception, ancestral healing, gender issues, and communicating with unborn children and overcoming fear. So that would give us plenty to talk about. Welcome to the program, Scott.
Thank you so much for having me today.
Well, you're very welcome. The type of subject that you're interested in, that appears in your newest book, is something of a special nature. How did you come to get an interest in that aspect of life?
Well, I think that this particular book is about my journey into becoming a parent and bringing a child into the world, which of course has its own challenges and wonderful experiences. But I think that the thing that was most intriguing for me during the process of bringing the child in was communicating with unborn children and how we have that relationship with unborn children, not only as we're bringing in ourselves into this world, but also as we get older, especially when we're bringing in another child.
Right. So why do we as human beings need to have soul contracts?
Well, essentially, what a soul contract is it's an agreement with the universe wherein you essentially decide ahead of time what you're going to be learning when you come to this planet. And so these aren't sort of individual tasks like, you know, I'm going to learn the timetables or, you know, what the capital of France is or anything like that. Mm. It's more along the lines of what sort of life lessons are we going to be learning, whether it be love or compassion or, issues like that are kind of bigger. It doesn't tell us how we're going to learn them, but essentially what is going to be the main core lessons that we're going to be coming to this planet to learn.
Right. So I take it that since you talk in that way of us planning a lifetime before we come to the planet, that you actually believe in reincarnation?
Yes, I think that that's probably fair to say. I definitely believe that that our life doesn't begin with our birth and end with our death as we know it. I believe that those are very important transitions amongst a larger continuum of existence. So, I would say that would be simplified to the word reincarnation for sure.
Right. Now, when we are here and we've grown up somewhat and perhaps we start thinking or wondering about what the purpose of life is, do you think it's possible for any individual to somehow determine what their contract may have contained? In other words, what the lessons of their life are going to be?
Well, I think that the main thing that we need to keep in mind is that that our intellect is a very useful tool for doing certain tasks, and figuring out why we're here on Earth isn't one of them. So whatever you do, don't use your brain to try to figure that out. But if you begin to start connecting with your intuition and following your heart, you'll definitely be you'll be informed of what are your life lessons, because what are the different things that are continuously coming up once you're on your actual soul's path. But like I said, sitting back and trying to figure it out intellectually isn't really going to work.
No, so something that is important in one's life, such as a relationship, whether that be in marriage or not, is presumably a very central plank of one's life. But does it go as far as to include our friends in the sense that the people we're going to connect with during our lifetime would have already been selected, as it were?
I think that there's definitely going to be some sort of cross paths with certain souls that are important to your life. I believe that you have a sort of a blood family that's extremely important when you're on Earth, but you also have an extended soul family, and it's very possible that you're going to be running into those people again, at subsequent times around. So I believe that certain of our friends or our members of our soul family will definitely play a major part in a major role in accomplishing whatever our soul contract is. I don't know if it's necessarily destined, you know, that this person is going to treat this particular piece of, you know, your destiny, but I think that we all have a tendency to gravitate towards one another, and, you know, close family is close family, no matter whether it's this lifetime or a previous one.
It's interesting to think in terms of a soul family, because that seems to infer that we have these relationships together, perhaps quite frequently, and therefore we would, I would think, logically be playing different roles within the family for the reason of bringing everybody on and progressing. Do you think that is the case?
Yeah, I definitely think we all play different roles and help each other out in various ways. You know, like I said, I think it's a little bit more complicated than that, but I think that at the end of the day, we all do what we can for the people that we love, and that's definitely a major part of that.
What about yourself? I mean, since you're well into this subject, can you see that within your own family or friends and relations? Can you relate to the fact that you're playing out a soul contract?
Oh, absolutely. I actually have a tendency for myself to be more attracted to members of my soul family than any others, to the point where I find one of the ways that I can sort of tell is when I meet somebody the first time or even second or third time, if I can't remember their names, then I oftentimes ascertain that they might not be a member of my soul family. And so I have a tendency to really gravitate towards and feel that connection with people when I come across a member of my soul family, even if I haven't seen them my entire life. There's some certain people you run into, and there's that time when you connect. And sometimes it's just an acknowledgement that, okay, it's great to see you again, and you never see you see them further. But at the same time, there's something that's profoundly important, and I think that's fulfilling one level of your soul contract, whether it's not feeling alone or being able to impact somebody in a much stronger way than you might think once you find out, you know, years later what a particular casual conversation might have set into motion.
Yes, I imagine these must be those occasions where when you meet someone for the first time, you feel as though you already know them and there's a great attraction between you.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I think that everybody's felt that way, but maybe haven't quite questioned why.
Right. Okay. Just moving on a bit here. What did you mean by conscious conception?
Well, essentially what conscious conception is trying to bring a child into this world by using your entire being holistically to attract the right soul to your family and to offer your family to the child soul. So it's essentially being sort of spiritually aware of that that bringing a soul into your life. I think the first thing to keep in mind with all of this, and you know, we touched on it a little bit with the concept of reincarnation, but in essentially, when you bring a child into this world, you're not actually creating a baby from nothingness or a soul from nothingness. You might contribute to bringing a vessel that soul can inhabit, but since the soul has existed previously. It's important to realize that all you're really doing is inviting that soul into your life, and conversely, keeping in mind that you're actually not the one that's in control; that the child is the one who's picking the parents during that journey. And so, all of that process, essentially, being aware of that and sort of keeping yourself open before you actually bring a child into existence would be the concept of conscious conception.
Right. Right. Now, I've often wondered at times when you are on the earth and you see some families that look particularly out of place, there seems to be a lot of friction between them and so forth, and then you think, well, did the children really choose those parents? Because they don't seem to be the ideal ones. But I suppose the answer is it still comes down to what lessons you need to learn in life. So as a child, if you're being advised that you need certain types of lessons, perhaps in discipline or whatever, then you're bound to choose the parents that can give you that experience.
Right, absolutely. And it's another thing to take that a little bit further, that in general, most of the most profound life lessons that we learn don't come from having a really easy, great day. They oftentimes come from having a difficult day, because those are the challenges that allow us to grow. And so it's as you were saying, the friction or the challenges are the ones that are going to teach us the more profound lessons.
Mm. So what you're saying is we haven't come into life for an easy time.
not in general. I think the good days are the ones that are kind of the breaks in between to give us the energies to move through the difficult ones.
Right, okay. Now, what is ancestral healing?
Well, ancestral healing is effectively as this world is evolving, we're familiar with kind of the natural concept of evolving species. We're also evolving energetically on a soul level as well. And as our souls progress throughout, as I say, it's important to have a strong connection with our soul family, but it's also important to have a strong connection with our blood family. And energetically, those connections with our ancestors help us move through this evolutionary phase that we're going through as the generations pass. So when we're finding ourselves moving through today's day and age, we're actually designed energetically to be able to draw from the strength of all of the ancestors that have gone before us. But there are times when, for various reasons, certain ancestors are essentially blocked from giving us that that clear energy flow from one generation to the next. And oftentimes what's happened is a previous generation may have effectively written them out of our family line. Maybe they were a difficult person, or they did something very bad, maybe killed somebody or something like that. Mm-hmm. And so over time, these people are actually sort of written out of our family history. And so what's happened there is we don't get the strength of that sort of smooth energy flow from one generation to the next. And so sort of untangling all of that all of that mess that might have happened in our previous generations is essentially the concept of what ancestral healing is, and the reason for it is so we can draw from their strength and more important, use ourselves as a conduit in order to help the energy flow to future generations.
Right. Now, since we are here to learn lessons, do you think that everyone has a guide, or perhaps even more than one guide, that tries to influence them from another level of being?
Well, I think that depends on the person. I think we all have different tools that help us with our own personal soul journeys. Some of them are being quiet in a cave and meditating. Some of us, it's more monastic life, and others might be, at the center of lots of different teachers that have been sequentially teaching them every single, religion that's ever existed. I think we all have our own path, and it's all very helpful to our own journey. And so I wouldn't put that one particular path on everybody. But definitely it's been the case for myself and others that I've known, but I also know other people that have progressed in many different ways than that.
Because I'm also thinking that it is not unusual perhaps for people to see some of their relations that have already passed on to come back to them at different times. I'm not suggesting that they stay there for about half an hour giving them spiritual teachings or something, but they do seem to still have that connection, don't they? And they like to let people know sometimes that they're there.
Oh, right, absolutely. Are you talking about ancestors that might have passed on?
Yes, indeed, yes.
Right, yeah, absolutely. That's definitely, I think that's wonderful if people can retain those connections. And as you say, it's probably more common than not that they try to offer some help on occasion.
Yes, I think so. Now, you talk about gender issues. Does that relate to whether, say, someone feels out of place as a man when they feel they should be a woman, or vice versa? Is that what you're talking about?
No, I think that maybe some of those issues are related. I think that what I'm talking about in general is coming from the spiritual community. There has been an awful lot of energy put into essentially honoring the divine feminine over the past several years. And so that was kind of the core issue that are not the core issue, but one of the core aspects of the people that I hang around. And so when I was bringing a child into the world, I actually had a relationship with my unborn daughter for several years before we brought decided to bring her into this world. And for various reasons, she decided not to come through, and instead a young boy decided to come through. At that point, my entire worldview sort of turned upside down, as well as trying to align myself with what is my role as far as being not only a parent but as a father. Especially because my father left my mother when I was very young, and her second husband adopted me. So just the concept of what is a father versus what is a parent, although intellectually I kind of understood it, it wasn't until I was bringing a child in that I started to question all of these aspects. And I also started to realize that I felt more comfortable around women than I did around men, and not really, again, spending too much time thinking about it. But when I was confronted with the concept of bringing a male child into the world, I began to question, what is gender? What is necessary as an evolutionary species? Do we really need two different genders at this point, or is a single gender enough? So these were some of the questions that I was asking during those 9 months.
So, do you think that anyone can have that pre-contact with a soul that you want to attract to you, to be born into your family? I mean, how did you achieve that yourself?
Well, it wasn't really a conscious choice. As I mentioned before, the children are usually the ones that seek out the parents, and so I was sought out more than the other way around.
Right.
I don't know. All I can say is they'll find you if they need to.
Right.
I really haven't thought about trying to find out somebody, but.
Right, well, that's a very intriguing point there. I mean, how did the first contact take place then?
Well, I think that as I become more sensitive and in tune with kind of the soul side of my life and trying to discern the difference between, you know, my intellect versus my intuition, things, you just have conversations. I guess for me, I just have conversations with spirits that are very similar to having conversations with somebody that is on this plane with me. But the difference is of course, I don't see them. But I guess it's almost similar to like when you go into a movie. Before you went into the movie, you have no idea what the movie's about. But then after you leave, you know exactly what the movie's about. And so that's sort of what it is, except for there's not that, you know, middle aspect of, you know, actually watching the movie. It just sort of comes into my my brain fully formed, and then, you know, I feel it in my soul.
Right. Now, how does the subject of fear fit into your book? Because you're talking of overcoming fear. What is the idea behind that?
I think that there was an awful lot of fear that that consumed me with the concept of bringing a child into the world. I think the first thing is, you know, can I afford to bring a child into the world? Can I afford to pay for college? You know, these types of things. I think money was a big part of the fear at first, and then it started to evolve more into, do I have anything meaningful to offer this child? You know, I'm afraid that anything that I can possibly offer is not worthwhile to share with somebody else. I think that was another fear of, you know, just being worthy of being a parent. Once I kind of got over that, I started to realize that you know, the more that I used my intuition and let my heart guide me on my path, that not only although I might have access to free will, but being able to follow my own personal destiny, that gave me a lot of strength with the universe behind me, sort of pushing me and kind of allowing me to relax into the situation and feel supported. So I think that was kind of the main thing, is just trusting that this is indeed the right path and that I will be fully supported. And as soon as that happens, then of course you get that trust and that support. And so I think that was sort of the core essence of how I was overcoming the fear. But you know, when you're bringing a child into the world, at least in my case, you know, the fear was happening every single minute of those 9 months.
Right. So I guess it would be true to say that if you were meant to have a particular soul in your family, it's going to happen because that's how it has to be.
Yeah, I think so. I think that there's, you know, definitely ways that you can second guess all of those things, but at the end of the day, I think what you say is ultimately the truth. But if you try to follow it every step of the way, it's easy to kind of question it because you might say, well, the soul was there for a moment and then it wasn't there anymore. And, you know, especially in the case of miscarriages or abortions,
yes.
Or I mean, there's all kinds of, you know, accidents. There's all kinds of reasons why a soul may have been there and then isn't again. But ultimately, you know, we definitely learn an amazing lesson, which with any soul that comes into our life, especially one that's a child.
Yes, indeed. Now, do you think the fact that we do have soul contracts accounts for the reason that when some people are thrown together in a relationship, even in spite of it being a very stormy relationship, or perhaps including violence of some form, that they seem to be unable to separate, and they keep coming back together, and there seems to be sort of repeat performances of all the problems. Do you think that's why some of the relationships seem to carry on, when perhaps people would say, why on earth don't you sort of leave?
Right, yeah, it's very possible that there's something else that that they haven't quite they haven't quite extracted from each other, whether it's you know, a life lesson or resolving the lesson that they seem to be repeating. So I think that there's some strong connections that that are absolutely necessary for people to remain together until they move through the sort of maybe less obvious lessons. Hello?
Oh, sorry. Yes, I was going to say, it probably explains why sometimes a child seems out of place within a family with its parents and its brothers and sisters. It's an example of another type of experience that they all need to have.
Right. Yes, absolutely. I think that this works on a soul level with everybody, and although it seems like these certain relationships are predefined of you know, who might be the leader or the master or the parent or the child, in some ways on a soul level, the child could definitely be the teacher in the relationship or you know, the sibling or whatever, but absolutely, these are extremely important relationships, and just because the outward appearance doesn't seem like it, it's compatible. I'd say pretty much every time, it's definitely beautiful in its perfection.
Mm. I suppose this idea, for someone who's not too familiar with it, becomes a bit difficult to understand, where perhaps within a family one of the members murders another member. I mean, it does happen. Mm. I mean, you and I would say, well, again, that's down to soul contracts. People might say, well, would we really want to choose that experience? What would be your answer to that?
Well, I think that, again, this is the difference between what is intellectually logical versus what is logical on a soul level. You know, definitely murder is going to be one of the most profound relationships that you're ever going to have in your life, both as the person taking the life and the victim. There's probably no stronger of a relationship that one can have. So, you know, do I think that this is, you know, morally good? No, but I don't think that that's necessarily the point when it comes to these types of relationships. I actually don't, you know, I personally think that that every aspect of murder, whether it's on, you know, during war or any other way, is horrendous. But at the same time, there's no denying that it's probably one of the most profound experiences one can have. So I think that these relationships that happen on a level, although it's in some ways it's going back to what I was saying about how easy experiences don't necessarily give you the most profound learning. And you know, in some ways, violent death or horrible relationships could be you know, instrument of some of the most profound wisdom that you're ever going to acquire. So, So it's hard to look at it, you know, personally, when it comes to these types of experiences, especially if you're the one that's at the mercy of the pain and suffering that this might inflict on somebody. But it's definitely a really powerful and, like I said, in some ways it is beautiful the way that you look at how these relationships work with one another. But it's difficult at the same time.
Yes. So, after having many lives, what is the goal that we're aiming for? I mean, where does it stop, assuming that there is some point at which we achieve a level of experience that moves us into something else?
Well, I think that there's different religions that kind of try to quantify that. For me, I don't actually find that. My brain is a little bit too simple in order to accommodate that answer. But in general, I believe that the reason we're here is to leave the world a better place than it was before we got here. And I think that as we continue our journey, that what we're really trying to do is help. As soon as we're done helping ourselves, which I think at the beginning of our lifetime, at least in this planet, we have a tendency to acquire some dramas that are going to allow us to learn our lessons. And then the first phase of our spiritual journey is to heal ourselves, and then to begin to heal our friends and family, ultimately our ancestral line, and then throughout the rest of the world and the universe. And how many times do we do that before we're simply done, I think is it's just a bit hard for me to answer that question. I know that the Buddhists believe that you have those 49 days after you die to essentially evaluate whether you are going to move on or return to this planet. I don't know if I believe that. I think that it's a good concept that allows you to get your head around it, but I'm not sure it's a literal 49 days or that you truly become enlightened and don't have to come back. But I think that there's some form of the truth in there somewhere, and I'm just not sure exactly where it is at this point.
Right, now, as I see it, and from what I've read, quite a large number of people during their sleep state go out of the body, and they talk of going into another level of being where people seem to them quite physical and normal, although the total aspect around them is somewhat different. Sometimes it's been called the Summerland, although there also appear to be variations in the levels down to one which is positively dark and a bit unattractive. So how does that fit in? I mean, because this evidently, I would assume, is the place where souls go to after they pass on. I mean, for whatever period between lives exists, one assumes they have to go somewhere.
Well, I believe that you have access to the spirit world through your dreams. I think it's one of the most common gateways that we have on this planet. It's not the only way to get there, but definitely one that I've experienced many times. And you know, I believe that the spirit world is actually ultimately a very large, expansive place, and there are all of those things that you talk about and more in the spirit world, whether it's you know, connecting with relatives or even visiting other people that are currently on this planet, and you can connect with them you know, while you're sleeping or both in the spirit world, as well as kind of the sort of primordial energetics that are the source of a lot of some of our favorite concepts to talk about, you know, whether it's love or hatred. I think that all of that exists in the spirit world, and so you can pretty much find anything you want. It's like New York City, but bigger.
Mm. It's certainly very interesting. I think people may well have experiences in what is called the astral level, and they may simply put it down to something that happens in their dream state and not realize it is another level of existence. People obviously must come into life bringing problems with them because of something that happened in an earlier life. Do you think that hypnotic regression and taking people back to lives where they may well establish the cause of the problem that they've had is helpful?
Yeah, I think so. I think it, again, depends on the individual person and the actual events. But I believe that all of these tools are very helpful. Sometimes the concept of simply reliving an experience, whether it happened in this lifetime or another, is all that's necessary to kind of reclaim that part of your that particular issue that you might be dealing with. One of the things I talked about in a previous book is sort of the concept of a shamanic soul retrieval, where kind of one of the Native American views of having difficult experiences throughout your life, that you have a tendency to shut a part of you down. As we get older, we have a tendency to deaden a piece of ourselves every time we have a difficult situation because we don't want to relive it. And the Native American view of what has happened every time you do that is you're essentially giving a piece of your soul away every time you shut that part of you down, and you've left that piece of your soul in that point in time when you had that experience. And so one of the ways of retrieving that is oftentimes with the concept of soul retrieval, where you would bring a shaman and travel back to that part of that time, that place in time when you had that difficult experience, and then bring that soul back to you. But the difference is you're not actually bringing it back to you in the way that it existed before, but you've actually brought the wisdom with you. So then when you integrate that part of your soul, you can then begin to use that wisdom and then share it with others. So I think what you're talking about as far as sort of past life regression is very similar to soul retrieval, except for it's not necessarily, guided by a shaman. But definitely the Native American view does not have a boundary of what has happened in this life versus a previous life or in some ways even a future life.
Right, so where do you think our souls originally came from?
Where do you actually? That's something that I've just started to grapple with, and I really am not quite sure. I feel in some ways my soul is infinite, and maybe have existed and will continue to exist forever. So I'm not exactly sure where a beginning came from. I guess that's one of those questions that everybody grapples with. If there is no beginning or end, then what is the shape of a soul? I don't know.
I'd like to think myself that we are all part of God, an aspect of God. So in that case, I suppose it wouldn't be out of order to say that we've always existed, and presumably if we have some goal that we are trying to achieve at the moment, one might believe that we are trying to get back to that source.
Yeah, I believe that we are, that in some ways, collectively, we are God, that we're... That we're all, if God is everything, then we are, all a part of God. So I think I agree with you. I think people get really caught up in the semantics of what God is and whose God is you know, the right God and all of these other things, which I think are sort of down to the intellectualizing spirituality that oftentimes comes with religious teachings. But I think in general, if you can kind of back away from those types of concepts, that I think you're absolutely right, and that's where we are all tied together, and we all are one.
Right. Now, I'm guessing here that you must have heard of the 21st of December 2012 as a significant point in our evolution. Have you got any ideas, or how do you think that will fit in with your own ideas?
Well, I think that that this concept of kind of an evolutionary shift, moving out of sort of the intellectualism of the previous few hundred years, and moving into the next level of evolution on a spiritual level, is definitely something that's been happening over the last several years, probably say 10 to 20 years, and has definitely picked up pace, and we're having a quickening over the last few years for sure. So in general, I think this time is a significant time for us. Whether it happens on that date or not, I'm not exactly sure. But at the same time, I have discounted all specific dates always, and just felt it. You know, it's less accurate than that. It's more of a, you know, collective evolution that's going on in this general time frame. But that being said, you know, another prominent date was 11/11/11, and yeah. I felt a market shift on 11/12. That was unlike the previous day. So I think maybe there's something to it. I think one of my favorite quotes about this was from Don Miguel Ruiz, who's definitely Mayan and teaches Toltec wisdom and all of these types of issues. And so coming from that era, he said, is this date going to be significant? And he said, it's just a date, but if you turn it within yourself, then it's and it's significant to you, then it will be. But at the end of the day, it's just a calendar. So, I think that the specific day, I'm not sure is going to be important, but I'm glad that many people are coming together and really starting to connect on a spiritual level, because I think it's absolutely imperative in where we are with our evolution as a species.
Right, yes. There is a school of thought that believes what is happening on the 21st of December next year is actually of a cosmic scale, where there is the direct alignment between our sun and the central sun, and it seems on these occasions there is a big shift of energy. So maybe it is an extremely important date, and of course the Mayans indicated that it was the end of this cycle, which cannot help but make you wonder what the significance of that is. So I think myself it is an extremely important date, so I'm looking forward to it.
Well, I'm definitely curious as well. I'm going to be paying attention no matter what.
Right. Now, something that I've noticed, I've got two boys, they're grown-up men now, but is that people sometimes bring back some very noticeable, if I can call it, habits from previous lives. My youngest son, when he was extremely young, used to sit around in a lotus position, and for various other reasons, I was quite convinced that he had been had a lifetime in India before. And I think this comes up at times and probably shows itself through people's preferences, maybe the places in the world that they like to visit. And when they get there, they really feel at home. So do you think there's a lot of evidence for that type of thing?
Yeah, for my own particular experience, absolutely. I remember when I first went to Dublin, Ireland. I knew the entire city like the back of my hand, and I knew every single corner, especially in the Temple Bar area, and was shocked because I had never been there in my life. I never studied it, and I was never even attracted to it until I found myself somebody mentioned the Book of Tekels one day, and I was like, I have to go there, and I felt more at home there than I had ever felt in my entire life. So I definitely, you know, for my own experience, believe that that's the case. That there's definitely some soul memory that's left over when you come. That's that can identify different aspects of the planet.
I surely agree with you there. And I think there's another aspect here. It's when people bring back fears. My youngest son was absolutely shocked and horrified if ever he saw a snake. And I suppose it may explain why a lot of people are scared of spiders for no apparent reason, because, of course, some of the bites of some spiders in other countries are fatal.
Right. Yep, absolutely. Yes, I think a soul memory is much stronger. I think that, you know, people oftentimes say that the sense of smell is the strongest, you know, the strongest sense that you'll have. The smell memory is, olfactory memory is the strongest memory there is. But I believe your soul memory is even stronger when you actually come across, you know, fear is of course one of the strongest emotions that we have. Here on this planet for very good reason, but I think that some of these other experiences are just as strong and salient.
Yes, right. Now, I've spoken about some of the main, what I think are some of the main issues in your book. Is there any aspect that you would like to mention that perhaps we haven't covered up to now?
Well, I think one of the things that I've been excited about when going through this journey is identifying with ritual and ceremony. I think that one of the main reasons of embracing ritual is to connect with someone larger than yourself, especially in today's day and age with the internet and all of these micro niches where you can completely accommodate any feeling that you want, any desire that you want, and completely surround yourself with anything that is just specific to your own interests. But I think that by doing that, we're losing the connection with the universe as a whole. And so being able to bring ritual into your life on a daily basis, I think, is extremely important, whether it's just a simple ritual connecting yourself with your family during dinner time or maybe seasonal type rituals. But I think once you've established that grounding, truly using that as a tool for ancestral healing and connecting back to your ancestors with rituals that may be important to them is definitely going to be very beneficial. I found myself, I have a Native American background, and I found myself connecting to some very strong rituals that were profoundly life-changing, and I'm very, very glad that I was have the ability to do that. So I encourage anybody, especially if you're going to be looking in ancestral healing, to embrace those ceremonies and rituals that you might be attracted to, because those are going to be some of those most profound experiences that you'll have.
Right. So let me recap on that when you're talking about ritual and ceremony. What is the general object? Is it to raise your own level of awareness?
No, I think that the main reason is to connect with others. You know, to connect yourself with something larger than yourself, whether it's a family or a community or an ancestral lineage or ultimately the entire universe. I think that these are the main reasons that you want to do that, is to become something of a larger whole.
Right. You've mentioned the whole universe there. Do you think that life extends outside of this planet and that it would be very similar as far as its own purpose for life? In other words, it's a purpose for all life, wherever it is?
Well, yeah, I believe. I mean, we were talking earlier about the the spirit world and that and other dimensions. So I think by definition that extends beyond the boundaries of this planet. And the ultimate reason for life, as I mentioned before, is to leave this place better than it was before we came. And I believe that's the case everywhere, whether it's your local grocery store or your tombstone. I think that any way that you can leave this moment better than it was before you got here is the ultimate goal, and that's irrespective of whether we happen to be on this planet or somewhere else.
We're not doing terribly well at the moment, are we?
No, I think we need to all work on that one.
Right, now, time as usual when we're having a nice chat flies by. Give you a few minutes here, if you would like it, to mention your website address and tell our listeners where your book is on sale or how they can obtain it.
Great, thank you very much. My book is on sale, are available at my website, which is scottblum.net, which is spelled scottblum.net. It should be available in most local bookshops and, of course, the larger retailers like Amazon, Barnes & Noble online. And anybody that wants to buy it, wherever they buy it, they can also register to win a trip to the Mount Shasta Resort, which is a beautiful mountain that plays a prominent role in my book as well. So that's all available at my website also.
I was unaware of that. When you say mention a trip to Mount Shasta, how do you relate to that? Is it something through buying your book that they have an opportunity to do? Is that what you mean?
Yes. Yeah. If they buy the book, they can go onto the website and put in the information of where they bought the book, and then register to win a trip to.
Oh right. Okay.
Resort. Yeah.
You probably said win a trip, and I didn't quite catch that. Oh, that's
or maybe I didn't. It's clear now.
Or maybe you didn't. Yes. Okay. Fine. That sounds very interesting. Are you planning to write more books? I mean, is this an ongoing thing for you?
Well, this is the third book in the series. So every other time that I've finished the book, I had already been deep into the next book. So this time is not the case. So this series might actually end up being a trilogy. So I'm not sure if there's a fourth book in the series, but at this point there's not. So I think after focusing on this book, next year is going to primarily be about my movie, which is called Walk In, and it's based on my first book, Summer's Path.
Right. That's almost a final question. I was going to ask you a little about it. I know you have said you don't want to say too much, but can I just ask you the most obvious question? When you're talking of a walk-in, do you mean the soul that takes the body of someone who's already here?
Yes. Yeah, the book and the movie is about a man who has a fatal disease, and just as he's about to lose all hope, he meets an angel in his dreams who agrees to take over his diseased body in return for giving him the body of a puppy.
Oh, right. Okay. Fine. Well, I think that's a good time for me to thank you very much for coming onto the program.
So, well, thank you very much for having me. I enjoyed it.
You're welcome. It's a very interesting subject, and I can't help but think that most people would have an interest in it. So thanks again, Scott. It's very nice of you. I've got time now to quickly announce next week's guest, who will be Brenda Hoffman. She's been an intuitive since birth, and therefore she does channeling. And she's written a book called A Glimpse of Your Future, which is described as a prophetic classic in this new earth transition. So again, another interesting subject, which is going to cover medical, political, financial, religious and other structures in life that will have some bearing on the future. So thank you for being with me today.
I'm sure you all enjoyed.
Thank you, Scott, again, yes. So I'll leave you for now and hope you can join me next week. God bless you all. Thank you.